We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Welcome. I'm Christy Shelley. I am the Chief Product Officer at Core Learning, and I want to welcome and thank you for joining us for this exciting conversation today. So let's get started with our webinar. We are all language teachers, how to infuse structured literacy across languages with Dr. Elsa Cardenas-Hagen. Our moderator today is Maya Goodall, who is a pioneering force in education, driven by a singular mission to ensure that every student, regardless of their linguistic background, receives the literacy and language instruction they both need and deserve. She continues to shape the education landscape as one of the leaders in design and enhancement of OLA, the Online Language and Literacy Academy at Core Learning. Maya's legacy is a testament to her extraordinary commitment to educational excellence. Okay, I'm going to give you just a moment to learn a little bit about Core, who is bringing you this webinar today. For 27 years, Core has championed the science of reading. Some people refer to Core as the OGs of science of reading. Take a moment to read the description of what we do and who we are. Our advisory board members over the years have included icons in the research on the science of reading, including Joe Torgensen, Barbara Foreman, Isabel Beck, Ed Kamianui, David Chard, Louisa Motz, Mark Shin, Phyllis Hunter, and of course, the one and only Elsa Cardenas-Hagen, who is with us today, to name a few. All right. I'm going to give a nice little background here on our guest speaker today. Elsa is a bilingual speech and language pathologist celebrated for her innovative work in language and literacy education. As the founder and president of the Valley Speech Language and Learning Center in Brownsville, Texas, yay, Texas, and a collaborator with the University of Houston, she specializes in creating transformative assessments and interventions for English learners. Dr. Cardenas-Hagen's expertise in dyslexia therapy and academic language therapy underpins her approach to evidence-based instruction. Her dedication is not just to teach, but to empower, ensuring that every student, regardless of linguistic background, achieves academic success. Her leadership and vision continue to inspire and shape the future of education excellence. And I know you will be inspired today. I will now turn it over to Maya.
Thank you so much, Christy, for that warm welcome. So we are so excited to have Elsa here today. We are going to talk about five really important questions regarding multilingualism and structured literacy. So let's just jump into the very first one. We hear this a lot about, in fact, I was scrolling through some social media just recently, and there was a post there by a very influential person in, literacy and language learning who still questioned whether or not the science of reading or structured literacy as a practice applies to multilingual learners. So, Elsa, how would you respond to someone who's still wondering whether or not these two things go together?
Well, I would like to say it's been, we're getting close to three decades of work. We're not quite there, but I would like to say that I recall the very first time, and I want to just shout out to Brownsville and Brownsville teachers, because Dr. Reed Lyon came to Brownsville, and our teachers, I'm so proud of them. They asked, what about students who are learning English as additional language or are dual language learners? And he went back and got the first $30 million to start this bi-literacy research network. And so with that, we're able to have today some very important documents. When I ask teachers, how many of you know about the National Reading Panel? People raise their hand. And I go, did you know that there's one, a National Literacy Panel for Language Minority Children and Youth? And no one knows about it. So I talk about it every chance that I get, because what we know is that those same research findings that we know about not only that phonological awareness and phonics, but really building students' fluency, vocabulary, comprehension are very important. And they are also important to students learning another language or multiple languages. And so what we have to do is we have to adjust our instruction to meet their needs, know your students, know what their language proficiency is, and use their home or heritage language to build that literacy, to build that language. But first, we have to know something about it, right? And you'll see there that we talk about those cross-linguistic features. And I write about this too, that there's so much that we know that can transfer across languages, especially languages that are alphabetic, like the English language. And one of the things in our country that we're not quite getting right is the majority of students from linguistic, you know, varied backgrounds, what we see is the majority of them are serviced in English as additional language classrooms, instead of really promoting that biliteracy, right? That dual language, because what a resource we have. And it's such an asset to have more than one language. So these research findings that I talk about, guess what? You know, it was by 2006 that there were, you know, more than 1,000 studies to look at. And this panel very clearly came up with these recommendations. But it doesn't stop there. Did you know the United States Department of Education has what are called Institute of Education Sciences Practice Guides? We call them IES Practice Guides. And there are practice guides that are related to these individuals who have come from linguistic, you know, different linguistic backgrounds. But right here, they're so simple to read. We can trust the Department of Education. And this one talks about teaching academic content and literacy to English learners in elementary and middle school. And some of our studies in here, and I just want to shout out to all the wonderful people I've had an opportunity to work with that, you know, this is who you'll read about you'll read about these studies. But not only the IES practice guides, by 2017, we had from the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine consensus study report. And what do they say? You're going to see how it's all tied in. Oh, provide for these students, provide that literacy instruction, that language instruction provided in phoneme awareness and phonics and reading fluency, vocabulary, comprehension. And here in this kind of consensus report, also written language, so important, listening, speaking, reading, and writing. And then I want to get more specific about the guidelines for you podcast listeners out there. In this National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine, this promoting the educational sciences of children and youth learning English in kindergarten all the way to fifth grade, what does it say specifically? Be explicit in your language instruction, in your literacy instruction. Develop that academic language all throughout that content areas. And that's where we come up. We are all language and literacy teachers. But when we work with students who are learning additional languages in school, we have to provide some supports. The visual supports, giving them a concrete example. In some of our studies, we do a quick even video of an abstract concept. And verbal supports, you can scaffold for their language to make that core content comprehensible. And we know as students are beginning to learn these multiple languages that it's also helpful to have that peer-assisted learning opportunity. And we know we must capitalize upon that home language, upon that their background, and use their background and their culture as assets, right? And does culture teach you to read? No, but it engages us. It engages us when we can see ourselves in book, when you honor us, when you honor our culture. But that linguistic connection, that is so evidence-based for being able to read in multiple languages. And I know Maya knows we've worked together on some things, right, Maya, about screening. There's lots of questions about screening. But even in this National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine, this report, it says, you know, screen early, use the tools that really included, you know, these students in their sample size, and make sure that you're working on language and literacy and that you address this very early.
Elsa, this is wonderful. And I really love that you are showing us all of the research that already exists. So just to recap, I mean, we have over 30 years of research on structured literacy and really effective instructional practices. That's really what we're honing in on. And we know that these things are true. We know how to teach someone how to read. We also know how to teach someone a second language. And what I love that you say over and over again is that learning the second language, becoming bilingual, or espousing the multilingualism is really what we're looking for. That's what we're trying to achieve. The United States is already a multilingual society. So why not leverage our knowledge, our cognitive background, and really help all students become multilingual? I'm going to move us along just a little bit to talk about the second question, because the second question really gets into a little bit more of the details of how do we do this. And I know that you sort of talked about it a little bit. There's, you know, the structured literacy, effective instructional practices, diagnosing, knowing what our students are. And I just want to add one little thing. In the past, I do think that learning English has been positioned as an intervention activity. And what we're saying is it is not an intervention activity. It is an opportunity for bilingualism. And so how do we use the structured literacy, effective instructional practices to help someone become bilingual? That's our question number two. I changed it just a little bit, but you get the essence.
Right. And so one of the first things, Maya, that is so important is that people don't understand what structured literacy is, and they think it's a program, Maya, and it's not a program. Structured literacy is really about the approach to your instruction. And so in 2014 was when this term came about, and it was through the International Dyslexia Association saying, we're not phonicators. We're not just about phonics and phonological awareness. We're about language. We're about language and being comprehensive. So structured literacy really is based upon the why behind the what and the how. The why is what you were talking about, Maya. The why is this, you know, body of evidence is accumulated. And what I was talking about, that we do have it for, you know, students that are learning, you know, other languages and learning English as an additional language. But what we must understand is that we're not talking, you said this, Maya, you said it's not an intervention. So that this whole thing is that who should be doing this kind of work? The general education, tier one teacher, the tier two and those small groups, and the specialized specialists who are working with students who struggle. But what should we be doing? What should you be doing? You should be including these components of language, the sounds, the phonology, right? The meaning, the semantics, the syntax, how it works, learning words through morphology, those small meaning units. But also it's about use, use, use. That what we call that pragmatic language. But how do we do this? How do we incorporate those five essential components? We do so in a very well-planned manner, being very explicit and systematic. But again, this is the approach, Maya. It's not a program. And so people get confused between, oh, the body of evidence and the research and the structured literacy, the how of the instruction. And so you can, you know, get an info map at dyslexiaida.org, and you can learn about structured literacy and what it really is, you know, that explicit instruction. But now I want to talk about for multilinguals, for those persons who are learning additional languages, right?
And Elsa, I want to just say one thing to all of the teachers that are out there. If you are a monolingual teacher, you still have the ability to give the gift of bilingualism to someone else. The more you know about your language, which in this case is English, the easier it is for you to share that language with someone else and help them become bilingual. If you're a monolingual teacher, you don't have to be responsible for the other languages. You can be responsible for English. And Elsa is about to tell you a little bit more about how you can do that.
So I want to modify that a little bit, Maya, because I do want to give some ownership to you that only speak English. And what I want to say, we're professionals. We're professionals and we have students in front of us, Maya, and we have to know something about them. Know your students.
Yes.
Know about their language.
Yes.
And so I give a website called mylanguages.org. It has all these languages and how the sounds can connect to the English language. Can we make some connections there, right? And so what I talk about in this multi-literacy is that you're going to be bringing in, yes, you're doing these components of language and the components of literacy, but you're bringing it in from the framework of, aha, I've got this student who speaks more than one language, and how can I make the connections when I'm teaching the phonological awareness? Oh, do these sounds exist in their home language? Can I make a connection? Huh, I wonder if this word exists in their language. Are these words similar across the languages? Because what you're doing there is helping the student to become what we call metalinguistic, thinking about language and thinking about reading and thinking about how does the sound apply to those letters and sounds? Is this an alphabetic language or non-alphabetic language? And how are there some similar patterns and rules? And guess what? I found it even in pictographic languages that you can make connections, not only in alphabetic languages, but too often we think, I don't know that language. I don't know anything about it. No, we're professionals. We have to know our student and do something about, what can I know about their language? What, you know, there's a lot, and I do between Spanish and English. What is so important is that our students do have that opportunity to make the connections. And you as the professional out there, can you make those connections between that oral language, that written language? Can you be that language teacher and the literacy teacher and make those connections? And that's important for that multi-literacy.
And I love that. I love that, Elsa, and I love that you uplift. So, you know, my point is you don't have to learn the entirety of another language. I've been in so many classrooms where people say, I don't speak the language of my student, and that's okay. But what you're saying is you can find things out, you can find the connections, you can make those cross-linguistic connections, and you do that because we're professionals, and also because professionals like you have created websites that make it easier for professionals like us to access that information, and we find those ways to make the connections. I just absolutely love that taking responsibility, and I'll pass it back to you because I see that you found some light and that you're... Some more information on how to do that.
Yes. So one of the things I want to say is that also when we're working with students in any of our studies that we've done, and, you know, thanks to, you know, getting to work with Dr. David Francis and Dr. Sharon Vaughn and so many. But let me just tell you, when we're doing our work and we're teaching literacy, we always were mindful of being very targeted and specific on teaching language and front-loading the language that was going to be required for our lessons and looking at what background knowledge do they need? What vocabulary do they need? What other kinds of literacy supports and language supports can I bring in? Linnea Airey and her work has shown also very important to bring in the language and the vocabulary. So stop calling us phonicators. I'm a speech and language pathologist. We're about language.
I love that. And the more oral language that we provide practice for the students, the better it is going to be. Oftentimes, I find that teachers are nervous about their time invested in conversations with the students, allowing the students to practice going back to that concept of the metalinguistic function and turning it on. And the only way you can turn it on is by actually practicing speaking. One of the things that we talk about all the time is that, you know, unless when the students are speaking, they are actually learning. And this is really key importance. And so that time invested in strategic thinking about, you know, our kind of graphic of how we teach reading and language and allowing the students to have that opportunity for practice is so important. It's about vocabulary and it's about full complete sentences, being able to use full complete sentences that are grammatically correct, practicing those, because that directly affects comprehension and all of the reading ability that the students will have. So just kind of talking to that moment of teachers who are nervous about spending so much time talking in class. In fact, the return on your investment is going to be exponential.
Yes. And then I want to just say, I love what you're saying, Maya, about the language. If I come and see, if I come and observe your classroom, you know what? One of the first things I'll write, please have the students speak in complete sentences. Model how you can extend the sentences. So I'm all about using that language and really helping our students to expand their language use in the classroom. But we have to be targeted and mindful of that and be authentic as well. So I love that you brought that up into this. The other thing I want to talk about is how we can integrate. Maya, I'm seeing now in classrooms, it worries me so much because I'm seeing that everything's compartmentalized, you know. Oh, I'm going to do phonological awareness here. And then I have my, you know, phonics lesson here. And then later I'm going to do, you know, some reading practice. And then at the end of the day, I'll do writing. No, it's listening, speaking, reading, and writing. And so anytime we're doing work with students, we have this integrated strand that we're always working on that conceptualization, that vocabulary, targeting the oral language, right? And working at the early stages, all on the listening comprehension through our read alouds and shared reading, but also that as we're developing those early skills of the sounds of the language, you know, English has about 44 sounds, Spanish has about 22. That's one of the languages that I get to work in. But we bring that, you know, sound awareness, we connect it to the letters and we make words and sentences and we practice that reading. But all the while, we have to be addressing vocabulary, oral language, and comprehension. And that's what I want to say about those integrated strands.
I love that. That is so great. And you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of move us along again to our next question. And that is this concept that, so we're talking about multilingualism, we're talking about multiliteracy, learning how to read, write, and speak in two languages at one time. And there has been this leftover idea that a student has to learn one language first and then the second language. And I'm actually going to kind of pinpoint just a little bit here. In fact, it was really thinking about helping someone extend their learning of their own heritage language first. When I first started teaching, we used to teach in English and Spanish, and we used to do a lot of Spanish teaching and then transition over into English. And so I just want to kind of delve into this concept that you have to learn one language first and then you learn the second language, and really maybe bust some myths still surrounding that idea.
Okay, so here you go. When we are babies, we are the species that are meant to be multilingual, number one. And, you know, a lot of the work, you know, there's work out of the University of Washington with Patricia Kuhl and also Dr. Ramita's out there that are showing little babies can respond to the different, you know, sounds of the language, to the words, and even learn another, you know, learn these languages. And, you know, they talk about the early years as being so essential and showing that they want to transform that early language instruction in our country of the United States, like in other countries, because other countries, they are multilingual. They've been doing this for many, many, many years, decades and decades. But yeah. The science indicates that babies are just wonderful learning machines and that we can learn multiple languages if we had the opportunity. And so it's that language opportunity, and we can learn simultaneous language development. There's humans are meant to speak. There's many benefits to this early speaking and through multilingualism. And you know what? They even start to make those connections across the languages. It's pretty amazing. But let's give those opportunities. You know, in the United States, when you get exposure to another language is in middle school, if you're a monolingual, when we should be doing this work, you know, right from the start. So it's important.
It's so important. And you know what? It's okay if you do wait late until later to get your exposure to the second language, that you can still learn it. Our brains are still wired for it. You're 100% still capable. But what we need is effective instruction in that second language, which is going to help the growth and the learning of the second language a lot faster. That's the difference between the simultaneous and the sequential bilingual. Is it's a lot easier to learn that additional language when it's actually being taught to you with effective instructional practices. But I love that you just busted that myth that, yes, we can learn how to read, write, and speak in two languages at one time. And I love all the research that you can give behind this. And you can just look at the rest of the world. It's happening every day, all the time. If you just need anecdotal evidence, you can also find that too. I love that. I just wanted to pause on that because I feel like there's still a little bit sort of, you know, questions around this. And I just wanted to make sure that everyone understands it's completely possible. So we'll move to the next question because this one also has a bit of kind of a trend right now. We're especially when you're in structured literacy, there's a lot being taught to teachers in professional learning around the reading brain. And really bring the science to reading to show what it is that's happening inside the brain with a student and why you would be doing particular lessons and practical kind of use with particular skills and strategies with students and how that connects to what's happening in the brain. And so then this sort of uplifted this concept of the bilingual brain. And is the bilingual brain different from this reading brain that the science of reading is talking about? And so I wanted to pause here and just sort of also talk about and explain what the multilingual brain is, and the structure of a monolingual person's brain, and is it actually different from a multilingual learner? So I'll pass it back to you, Elsa.
So Maya, do you have a heart? Do I have a heart?
Exactly.
Maya, do you have a brain? Do I have a brain?
I hope so.
So we all have this wonderful brain of ours, right? And it's there and it's ready for use and it has its structure and its areas in the brain. And, you know, we know that certain areas in the brain are really dedicated so much to language, right? Really, you know, thinking about that left hemisphere, right? And oh, we got to know our rights and our lefts first. But anyway, what I want to say about that is, you know, these areas that get activated, absolutely. We get to see the print that's in front of us. That's that occipital lobe, and then that temporal lobe with the temporal parietal is where we're putting those sounds with the letters together, and then we're able to, you know, speak and really understand, and so that we're getting more to the, you know, frontal area. But what I want to talk about is that how we access, you're multilingual, Maya, I'm multilingual, you're multiliterate, I'm multiliterate. But what happens in our brains is we still activate these same areas, but what happens is that we have resources and we use those resources, and I might be going to certain areas more often than other areas, or I might take an alternate pathway. And so I had the pleasure of having getting to co-present with Yulia Kovelman from University of Michigan, and we got the chance to really talk about, and she got to describe about that bilingual exposure, having exposure to more than one language. And she talks about how, oh my goodness, what happens in that, you know, kind of left inferior, that frontal, left inferior frontal cortex or the frontal gyrus. What happens is that there's extra blood flow there. And so, you know, they're still doing this research trying to say, well, when do you go to that? When do you not go to that? And what's really awesome is she's also looked not only at languages like Spanish and English, but also they've been looking at Chinese and looking at, you know, words in Chinese and words in English and words in Spanish and, you know, how well we use, you know, that morphological knowledge, and that maybe the, you know, Spanish and English are similar because they're alphabetic, but the Chinese, they might, because, you know, the way their words are set up, are more, you know, have more like morphemes, you know. So she is doing all this excellent work on looking at simultaneous bilinguals, looking at the different languages and looking at, seems like, there's extra things going on, you know, we really think at a deeper level, we're making these connections. And so what they're trying to do is show this actually in the brain. And I'm not a brain scientist, but I'm so fascinated by that and fascinated by the fact that, wow, we can really take advantage. And I often say I used to work in head trauma rehabilitation for many, many years. And it was always so fascinating to see individuals who had, you know, injury to, you know, some parts of their brain, like such as the left, you know, temporal parietal lobe. And so what was so interesting was to see how they use those in the rehabilitation process, use that. And so such an asset to know another language, to be able to read into languages. And I really wish more people had that opportunity. But follow the work of these brain scientists, you know, all over, and especially those that, you know, they've done such incredible work. But those that are also doing the work on this multilingualism, it's very fascinating.
It's so fascinating. I mean, if you love research, this is the place to go in terms of cognitive science, neuroscience, and bilingualism. It's super exciting. And, you know, it really makes me think when I started my teaching career, Prop 227 passed in California, that was the English only law, because there was this idea that one language would actually create a barrier or inhibit someone from learning the second language. And there was an entire law passed in the state of California based on that idea. And so what we know now from cognitive science and neuroscience is that's completely wrong. It's not true. We know, again, and you know, my little mantra is we can learn how to read, write, and speak in two languages at one time. But this, the science is actually substantiating it. And I it's super exciting for me. I really love it. So thank you so much for just helping us and leading us down this path of looking into the science of it.
Maya, I want to clear up something that people often tell me, Maya, and that's also a myth, that when you're learning, you know, two languages, that, oh my God, it's not going to be possible. It's going to delay you. And absolutely, that's not you know, coming to fruition. We can do this work and we can do it early.
We really can. And I think what, you know, one of the things that we know is I love, because in fact, some of these studies talk about it. So when the children are being tested for their languages, they have headphones on, they're looking at screens, and a bilingual child will come knowing that one object, let's say a noun object, a ball or a pen or a pencil, that one object can have two names. And so when they're doing these studies, they'll show an inanimate object to a student and they'll give them a fake name. So a fuzzy wuzzy, for example. And so the student might not say fuzzy wuzzy right away, the way a monolingual will. And what they're determining is because the bilingual student is waiting to see if there's another name for the fuzzy wuzzy that they need to know. Is it going to have two names or are they only going to have one name? And so that sometimes looks like a delay to, you know, an untrained observer. And so that sometimes I think that's where we get stuck is, a lot of times students are just waiting to find out, okay, is there another word for this? Am I going to learn, you know, or I already know another word for this. And so I'm integrating that new knowledge. And that might seem like a pause, but it's not a delay, like you're saying. It is an opportunity for us to learn more and really integrate this knowledge into our, you know, our brains, and maybe some blood flow into the part of the brain that is learning that extra word. All right, next question that we will move to is, how would you respond to an educator who feels overwhelmed? And I think this is really true. Like, okay, I really want to help. I know maybe I am monolingual. I can do some research, but they're you know, nervous about it. They don't know where to begin, or they just think like, I can't make a change there. I don't know if I can really do this. How would you help them and respond to that?
So my first my first recommendation is know your stuff. And what I want to say about that is make sure you have the background knowledge that you need about, you know, how can I change and how can I make sure that I'm, have these practices in place that we know are evidence-based, right? So the first things first is use these strategies for developing language and literacy. And I talk about these routines in the classroom. So start from the very beginning that when I am in my classroom, I have to start with the purpose in mind, what's going to be expected of them. But what about what I'm using in this classroom can help this student to bring up their language and their literacy? And how can I make those connections? But as a professional, what do I need? What do I need? What do I need to do?
I just want to pause for a second, Elsa, and I want everyone who may be listening to hear the title of this book. It's called Literacy Foundations for English Learners, and Elsa Cardenas-Hagen is the author. So if you're wondering how to move forward and make some practical choices in your classrooms, one place to begin is with this book, Literacy Foundations for English Learners. You'll find a lot of information there that you can use. I didn't want that slide to go by without announcing it to our
And basically what's in there, Maya, is what we're talking about. We're talking about making those connections in all the components of language and all the components of literacy. And what I tried to do in the book is bring the research to practice and give you these step-by-step kind of ways that you can begin this work. Because you're right, Maya, teachers can feel overwhelmed. And so maybe one of the first things is to educate yourself on, you know, what's the why? Just like I showed you that info map on structured literacy, what's the why behind the what we're going to be doing? So if I could look at that, what's the why? What do I know from the science? What is one practice that I can begin with? Or maybe I'm already doing some of these evidence-based practices, but what am I not doing, right? I might be working on vocabulary, but am I also working on how that word and that vocabulary can extend across languages or make connections? Or how does that look in print for the spelling or the orthography, right? And how can I do this kind of work across the content areas? Earlier, Maya, when we were talking, I showed that IES practice guide from the Institute for Education Sciences for you podcasters out there, Institute for Education Sciences. And one of the things that it talks about there in that practice guide is how you can bring in the language, vocabulary, and literacy across the content area. So I never thought I would be a math teacher or a science teacher. And lo and behold, we're in math and science classrooms, actually bringing in language and literacy into the classrooms. But our students need to be able to read and need to know how reading works, to read, to learn other information. And if they're missing that, then I've got to start at where they are. So know your students. And then as I look at those routines that I'm doing, Maya, which ones are giving me the most impact and which ones have the most evidence? And what am I not doing that is evidence-based? And what extra routine can I bring in there, right? So I've got to be able to make this kind of like short-term goal for myself. Okay, I'm doing a pretty good job of, I'm teaching the letters and sounds, but I need more on connecting it to connected reading and vocabulary and comprehension. Or, you know what? No, I'm doing a lot on vocabulary and comprehension, but I need to do more on teaching the structure of the language and teaching them how it, you know, maps on to, you know, cross-linguistically. I need to do more in the letter and sound correlations and more on the students even figuring out the sounds that exist across the language that are the same. But give yourself a little goal, and it doesn't mean you have to buy a program. Remember what I said about structured literacy. The programs are there to help guide you and to help you deliver, but you've got to empower yourself to know the science, to know the why behind the what. What say you, Maya?
I love that, Elsa. I love that so much. And I love that you use words like empowering yourself. So, I mean, we are professionals, like you say, and it is up to us to take some ownership of this knowledge and look at the research. And maybe you're not looking at the exact research, but you're looking at the research as it's connected to practice, like in a book like yours or in professional learning that does that. But I want to take a step back for a second, and I want to think about you saying that you never expected to be in a science or a math classroom. And I just want to kind of uplift that just for a second longer and think about a math teacher and a science teacher, an art teacher, the PE teacher, and how they are also language teachers. And maybe pass it back to you to elaborate a little bit on how, you know, the content teachers, as we like to call them, can think of themselves also as a language teacher.
I love that. And what we were actually, you know, what I want to say about that is that every content area, students will have to learn the words around the content that they're learning, right? They have to conceptualize it. And also we have to read, and they're reading to learn. And so, you know, what we did in these studies was we made sure that we front loaded, you know, made sure that we gave the vocabulary, that we use these evidence-based practices of using, you know, cognates and, oh my God, morphemes. You know, think about science. Those, you know, a lot of science words come from the Greek, and a lot of words like for also like in social studies come from the Latin. And what I want to say about that is we made sure that our teachers knew to teach the language, to teach them how to read what they were going to be reading and to write, and also to communicate. And what was so fascinating is we even brought in read alouds. Can you imagine a read aloud in a math classroom, aloud in a science classroom? And what we found is that when, you know, we compared it to the, you know, the control classrooms, the classrooms that weren't doing the extra practices, that these students not only improved in their language, but they also improved in that content area, right, of math and science, and in others, like Dr. Vaughn and her team did it in social studies. And so it's been so fascinating to see, and also to see the changes in the teachers themselves saying, I never realized that I needed to be a language teacher as well as this content area teacher. And I think our language arts teachers, they kind of, you know, they do see themselves as language and literacy teachers, but we need to be very specific across the day, across the content areas. And anytime we can make those connections, right? Anytime we can, oh, this is what they're learning in science. How can I bring that into my language arts?
I love that so much. It's, you know, as we've just been saying, it's the foundation for everything else. So the more that we can practice speaking and having those conversations and connecting it to language arts and to content areas, the better. And then I love this quote that you have. So I just want to hang on it for a second. It says, I'll read it out and then I'll let you elaborate.
It's, all right.
It's the knowledgeable professional implementing evidence-based practices who will have the greatest positive impact upon their students. Tell us more.
So the reason I say that often to teachers is I, you know, work with them in, you know, professional development capacity of training. I, you know, it's when you, again, have the opportunity to deepen your knowledge and to become that professional and really bring in these evidence-based practices, you're making decisions every day about how to scaffold for the language, how to, you know, break down a literacy concept or a content concept. And you are the persons that could have this positive impact upon your students. Again, teachers, you teach. And because you are deepening your knowledge, and hopefully you've gotten some things out of our discussion today, you know, where can I go and read more about this? You know, I'm going to bring in these evidence-based practices. You're the person that's going to have that positive impact upon your students. And we have to take ownership of that and, you know, feel empowered to be impactful.
I love that. And I love this next one too. It's a symbiotic relationship. So the slide says language supports literacy and literacy supports language. Will you talk just a little more about that symbiotic relationship?
Yes. And so what I want to say there is we've had this discussion today about how important it is for our students, you know, learning multiple languages, that they have strong foundation in language, that they know about the sounds and they have great vocabulary and words and they know word learning strategies such as, oh, these meaningful word parts will get me there and I can put that together for writing. But what I want to say is that when I have and when you have taught me how to read and I can read to learn, and when I'm reading to learn, I'm getting exposure to wonderful, wonderful academic words, wonderful concepts. When you read, I can go across the world, across all kinds of subjects, and I'm getting that academic vocabulary, that great deep comprehension. So my literacy can support my language skills. I'm going to get great language and vocabulary from reading, but I've got to have that strong language to support my literacy. So language supports literacy and our literacy supports our language.
I love that. You explained that so well. So, you know, it's this relationship between building the language that we want the learners to know and to learn to read in. And when the students know how to read in that language, they can then develop and go further into the language and learn more words, more sentence structure, more ways of expressing themselves. And we know that this is true. And it's such a beautiful thing. And as you mentioned, reading takes us to so many different places. We know this. So it's back to your why, I think, not just why you're doing a particular practical skill, but your bigger why. Why are you learning and teaching someone else how to read? What is it that you hope to achieve and help the world do and change to be? Because we know that through education and through reading and through learning, we expand ourselves as a citizenship, as a society, as human beings, and how we can offer more to ourselves and to our students by doing this work. So do you have any comments on that, Elsa? Just like, what is your personal why?
Well, I think my personal why I'm so passionate about this is because, like you, Maya, we were led down the wrong path. Our parents were led down the wrong path. My parents were told, do not speak to them in the home language. Do not allow that. And when we were in school, we were punished for speaking our home language in the classroom. And even in the playground and even during physical education, we would get in trouble and spanked with these wooden paddles. I'll never forget that. And, you know, it wasn't until middle school, like I'm telling you, where you get to do the foreign language and really shine and show, look at all I really already know. And because of that, I have such a passion for that not to happen to our students who have, you know, another home language and who have these wonderful, you know, culture and language, and that they not be deprived from using their language and using that language to develop other languages. And really, you know, we are just as smart, just really thinking about like, am I as smart as other people or not as smart? And just really realizing there's a continuum of learning language. There's a continuum of learning literacy. Know where I am, know where your students are in that continuum, meet them where they are and build them up so that they can be all that they can be and that they can have these opportunities from you, the expert professional that will make that great impact upon these students.
I love that. Thank you, Elsa. Yes, my story is very similar. I'm third generation. And so my heritage language was actually, you know, paddled out before I was born. And I didn't get to learn my heritage language until university. And so it's, you know, we are here to champion heritage language. We know that you can learn how to read, write, and speak in two languages at the same time. And so one of the things that, you know, for my work, what I'm showing now are references to all of the research that Elsa talked about in some slides. And then I am going to just talk about a little bit for a moment before we get to the question and answer period about the work that we're doing at CORE. And we have created an online language and literacy academy. And what we do with that is we center structured literacy for teachers who are teaching specifically in language diverse classrooms. How do I bring structured literacy and all of the things that Elsa just talked about into a classroom where I know my learners are multilingual learners, they're English language variety speakers, and maybe they need extra repetition, perhaps they'll be identified as dyslexic. We know that this is actually our classroom now across the United States. Our classroom is going to be inclusive, it's going to be diverse, and we really want to bring together those effective instructional practices for your language diverse classroom. It's an online program. And of course, you'll be invited to find out more if you would like to find out more. It is an asynchronous program with some live facilitated sessions that are built in so that you do actually have access to someone who can help answer questions. There is a lot of practical use. You can take the learning, use it in your classrooms. And then, of course, because it's online, we have some exciting ways that we're able to engage. And we'll have classroom simulations where teachers can watch things happening in class and make decisions on what should happen next. What should the teacher do next? Kind of like choose your own adventure. It's a way for a teacher to watch things in real time and then see how things play out and get some effective feedback right away. So that it's really exciting. It is a platform that we're very proud of. And so if you want to find out more, please do. And now I'm going to invite Christy back on just for our Q&A session.
Wow. Well, that was amazing. Thank you both. Tons of comments, tons of thank yous. Just wonderful. When you have a moment, read through the chats because there's lots of praise for you both. Okay. Do you want to start with the easy ones or the very challenging ones? Let's see.
Go into the good ones.
There's so many. Okay. I have a good one. Elsa, can you tell me more about the why in structured literacy? And I'm going to layer that on if you can tie it back to our conversation today with language diverse students.
Yeah. So when Amaya asked the question about does the science of reading apply to students who are learning, you know, more than one language, and I pointed us to some, national reports that were meta-analyses that include thousands of studies, right? And one of the things I didn't talk about is we're really working hard on, we know the why, right? And we know enough about the why, but what we need is the what and the how more of. And so I was pointing to the multi-tiered systems of support, MTSS, number4ls.org. And what we were doing there I was with the team with Dr. Linda Cavazos and Dr. Apple Ortiz. And what we were really doing there is really trying to implement, right, this structured literacy across the tiers, looking at how does this look in the, you know, general classroom and in special education or in that tier two instruction. And one of the things that we were always talking about is that incorporation of the language. And, you know, so we have these literacy briefs there about this is what we're learning about the how, right? And it's really getting to that science of the implementation. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need more of, is that implementation. And really, there are some studies that do this longitudinal. So we have in some studies that followed the children, you know, at a good, like we, those interventions, you know, we did those for 10 years, others have done for 10 to 12 years. And so, I mean, it's really been looking at children from, you know, where did they start and where did they end up? And so we have a lot about, you know, what we should be doing and what makes a, you know, evidence-based practices. And we're still really trying to get to the implementation science. How can we get everyone to do so, so they have great outcomes in language and in literacy?
Wonderful. Thank you. I have a very quick question that somebody asked when Maya was mentioning OLA, the Online Language and Literacy Academy. Someone asked, is this the same professional learning as the one that used to be called OERA? Yes, it is an evolved version of OERA. So if you know OERA and the wonderful online professional development product that was out there by CORE, then you are familiar with the strong structured literacy foundation that will be in OLA. And we talk about the why, the how, the what of structured literacy. So you can learn more about that in OLA. Okay, this is another good one. Elsa, I like what put your name right in front. You were speaking about letter sound correspondences. How does that differential between two languages, for example, English and Spanish, impact decoding across those two languages?
So what's so beautiful is I find 19 letters and sounds that directly correlate between Spanish and English. And so that's beautiful. That's a starting point. Give me credit for what I know. Don't teach me as if I bring nothing to the table, right? And then, but what's different about that is in a language that's transparent like Spanish, I have, you know, five vowel sounds that, you know, they never change. So I never, ever had to learn that the English language has syllable patterns. And that's when I know to do the short vowel sound and long vowel sound. Do you know that I learned that as an adult? And I wish I had learned it as a young girl when I was learning to read in the English language. And so that's, you know, that's really what's, you know, that's one of the part about the decoding portion I think this person's asking about. So although in the Spanish language, I have patterns that look like your syllables patterns. I have patterns that end in a vowel with a consonant or syllables that end in a vowel, but I don't worry about that in my heritage language because those vowels never change. So you've got to teach me this new structure and the why. Why do I have to learn about how these syllables, oh, so it's because the sounds change, right? The sounds change. And I don't have to memorize and guess at the sounds. I know when to say the short sound and the long, and oh, I know not to say that final E. So that's what's so different.
Okay, wonderful. Our time is up. Oh my goodness, that went by so fast. There were a lot of questions about adolescents and older students, and I'm crushed we can't get to those.
I can give a website for that, Center for Success of English Learners at the University of Houston, and it's all on adolescent students learning.
Say that one more time, the website.
It's cselcenter.org, cselcenter.org, and it's the Center for the Success of English Learners, and it's at the University of Houston and other it's a national project and on adolescent literacy for this population.
Perfect.
Thank you. And if you want more information on OLA, you can also email us and contact us at, go ahead, Christy.
Oh, yeah, at info@corelearn.com. And don't forget to join us tomorrow And Thursday, I'm trying to think of the days of the week for more wonderful sessions brought to you by Maya and our experts. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful week, everyone.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.